Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Download the Odyssey app and listen on demand anytime.
Mike Milbury this morning on with the Greg Hill Show. That was Chris Curtis asking the question about Jeremy Swayman. And listen, I don't always agree with Mike Milbury on hockey-related things or other things. But when you're right, you're right. They should have given him that deal 2 months earlier. And then he probably would have been there, and it would have made a bit of a difference. Maybe. I don't think Jeremy Swayman's really been your problem, not in these last two games. Certainly not in that Predators game where you get shut out 4-0. And one of those goals was an empty netter, and he made 38 saves. And listen, I'm not here to over-defend Jeremy Swayman because he hasn't looked great. But this team's got some real problems that stem way beyond the goalie, who I think's been fine. Their defense, not fine. Their top to scoring, not good. Turnovers have been atrocious so far all throughout the season. The only thing that really makes me feel like it's not that bad so far, and Razor brought this up too in the midday show a couple hours ago, is that no one's really running away with it in the Atlantic Division. Florida right now is 4-3-1. They have 9 points. The Bruins are 3-3-1 with 7, and that's it. There's only 4 points separating first and last place in that division. Over in the Metropolitan, it's a little bit different. You have a couple of three teams already in double digits. Rangers, Devils, and Capitals all up there. The Flyers are certainly at the bottom. But, you know, you look around, there's not a lot of teams that are really taking off and grabbing the ball and running here. And I know it's a hockey puck, but you know what I mean. And that's good for the Bruins. I mean, that's really the only thing that you look at and say, okay, they may not be off to a great start, but it's not like they've dug themselves a big hole here.
No, and that is good, but the reality is they're just not playing very well. And It's weird. You know I'm not a real analytics guy. So I'm certainly not a hockey analytics guy.
I don't even understand what the hockey analytics stats are abbreviations for.
Okay.
People post them, and I'm
same.
Like, I don't know what that is.
So I was reading, Fluto did a whole breakdown with things that I don't necessarily understand, but it seemed to break down to this. They're not scoring very well, and their goalies aren't playing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Swayman is 22nd in expected goals allowed, 59th for your backup goalie.
Yep.
That, how many goalies are there? That's that question. 74 is the answer. He's 59th out of 74 that have tracked this year.
Okay.
But, you know, a year ago, you were way above expected goals allowed. Now you're a negative side of expected goals allowed. And then all these other fancy numbers say you're not scoring very well. They've already had to shake up the first line, right? Like, there's some disappointment there.
Definitely.
We talked about last week, you're not going to be carried by your fourth line forever. That's not sustainable. But you just look at that game. You gave the Predators their first win. I believe they've scored 14 goals all year in 6 games, and 4 came in shutting you out 4-0. Like, that was an embarrassing kind of loss for a team that has cup aspirations.
Yeah, and that's coming off a loss to the Utah Hockey Club, 2-1.
They don't even have a name.
2 nights before then, which, can you imagine not having a name, how embarrassing that would be?
But
yeah, that's, listen, I think that's it's fair. It's fair to point at this. It's an early season West Coast road trip. I get that. And I understand that sometimes you don't get your best games out in a setting like that. But you know what? Boo-hoo. This is the NHL. You should be ready to go. And even with Jeremy Swayman, who should be the least ready to go, he's the only one who showed up in that last game. He's the only one who did anything. I could say that about the Utah game too. These guys offensively look lost out there, and it's just so sloppy. It's sloppy, uninspired hockey, and you're starting to see some frustration already. You saw Montgomery lose it on Brad Marchand the other day, which I didn't think was too big of a deal, but it got talked about a lot. Marchand addressed it today. He says, hey, you know, we're not playing well, and he should be going after me like that, and everybody needs to relax, and I tend to agree with him. I think it's something that you need to freak out about, and I don't think anybody crossed any lines or anything like that, but you get off to a bad start with a lame duck head coach, you see an interaction like that, and you start thinking things. I mean, why wouldn't you? That's Brad Marchand. It's not just some guy. He's the longest tenured player on this
yep.
team. He's your guy, and they're going at it on that bench.
And frustration is setting in, and I think I read a quote from Montgomery, something about he feels like, I don't know if you use the word pressing, but like they're trying to be too perfect. Hmm. Because they are struggling, they're trying to be too perfect, especially in their passing, and that's leading to some of the sloppy play rather than just sort of being fluid and playing hockey the way you know you can, being athletic, letting your skills take over. And it is early, but I do think the contract thing is interesting. And as you start to, okay, so he goes after Marchand. Well, Marchand's kind of a leader on this team.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have Razor telling us if the contract becomes an issue, it'll be an issue that they haven't given it to him.
Right.
But you just have to wonder, like, how this all plays out as they continue to scuffle out of the gates. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's, although it is a funny West Coast trip where one of the games is in Nashville.
Nashville, right.
It's not really that far west coast, but...
It's west of here, but not really.
It is
really,
west of here, but you wonder how long this kind of lingers. And, you know, we're seeing it with the Patriots. Like, this I actually think is a better example of it, is pressure building where you just need to play well. You just need to win. Mm-hmm. You just need to turn it around on the ice. But, you know, it does start to manifest in frustration between the coach and the players, within the players, like guys on the ice. And that's the road they're going down when... They, you know, we thought this, and I totally buy the whole thing, because you look at the standings, and you're like, oh, well, they're really not that far.
No, they're right
one
there.
One win?
Yeah.
They're one win behind
them. 2 points away from right, the first place. Yeah.
So it is a little bit of those overreact to the results on the ice. Do you underreact if you look at the standings? But then you say, well, at some point, you got to play good hockey, because I'm pretty sure other people are going to start to play good hockey. This is like the Red Sox. Remember when Alex Cora... What do you call them? Wasted days?
Yes.
Because everybody was playing crappy, and it's like, well, they still have a chance, but you're playing crappy. You're not taking advantage of everybody else playing crappy, and at some point, they might not play crappy.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at this Bruins team. At some point, if you don't start playing better, somebody will.
Razor started, he walked back his whole thing about the coach and caring about whether the coach has a contract or any of that
stuff. Oh, he did.
He started walking that back today. I don't know if you noticed, but
no.
He was like, really what it's about, guys, I know this is good for talk radio, which, by the way, I hate when people say that on talk radio. When they're like, oh, this may not be a great talk radio answer. It's like, don't say that. We'll decide if it's a good talk radio
answer. Just talk on the radio.
Just talk. We'll just, you know, we'll get to that. Don't immediately undermine whatever point you're going to make. Either way, he was like, all we really care about is going out there and playing our best. If the coach has a contract, if the coach doesn't have a contract, we can't control that. It's no big deal. There's nothing we can do about it. So really what matters is going out and playing. That's not what he said to us on opening night. What he said to us on opening night and what you were just referencing, I thought was a little bit more close to the bone here. And I don't know if it's affecting anything this early in the season. To be honest, it probably isn't. But as the season goes on, yeah, if they care about this coach, if there's an attachment to this coach and they're not doing right by him, then yeah, I could see that having an impact, a negative one. Sure, why wouldn't it? Elliot Friedman had this to say over at Sportsnet Canada, and I agree with this. He says, the eye test isn't pretty. The underlying numbers are unusually poor, and the theory is that the Bruins' 2 games with Florida messed them up. The playoffs are for taking numbers and dealing with things next season. The Bruins desired that, and it was a pointed topic of discussion. But the Panthers beat them twice and did not allow Boston to gain any satisfying measure of physical payback, which everyone told me was no big deal. It's just the first couple games of the season. That meant something. There's been a lot early. That was my saying that, by the way. Back to Friedman. There's been a lot early. Jeremy Swayman's lengthy contract stalemate. Jim Montgomery going hard at Captain Brad Marchand on the bench in Utah. That yelling wouldn't bother me as long as it was a rare occurrence. I'd be more worried if it happened all the time. That's a sign of things coming unglued. A couple sources pointed out that they don't like coaches who only make examples of young players or fourth liners, and Montgomery isn't afraid to criticize his star. They don't look like themselves, but repeatedly made us look like fools for anticipating their demise. High IQ team that isn't itself right now and needs a restart. Again, personal opinion, but I thought those Florida games really threw them and reminded us that the Panthers are still a force. I agree with that Florida stuff 100%.
Mm.
They came out there, and they didn't look like they were coming out there trying to play normal Bruins hockey. They were out there trying to settle scores, and the Panthers didn't let them, and they beat them. And then they beat them again. Like, that's a tough way to start the season. It just is. That's a tough way to go into a season with expectations and a reworked roster. It's same with the Knicks, I would say. You know, you come into the South, you come into the Garden, you're all pumped up, ready for this, and this is the way it starts. There's a lot of hockey and basketball left to play, sure. But that's a tough way to start the year, and it's reverberating, I think.
Plus, if you oversimplify it, we just said they're 2 points, 1 win behind.
Right.
Well, I mean, you played that team twice.
Be in first place.
If you could have handled your business at all. I did want to just touch on, real quick, go back to where we started this segment with Milbury. It's easy to say what he said. I think everybody agrees. Yeah, give him this contract 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Would this contract have got it done 2 months ago, or was there a process of negotiation that had to be worked through? Like, that's the simple answer, because Swayman's not playing great. If you're 22nd and I'm paying you to be... What is he? What is 8.2?
Top 10, I think. Top 5, yeah, okay. Somewhere around there.
So he's paid much higher than his performance right now, mm-hmm. If you use the fancy analytics on The Athletic.
Sure.
I looked at. So it's easy to say you should have given him the deal. Yeah, you should have signed him. Would you have signed him if it cost $9.25 million 2 months ago? Because I do think the numbers came closer. They were lower, he was higher, and they started to squeeze in the middle, and people got mad, and things got aired publicly. But I don't know it's as simple as saying, if you had given him this deal 2 months ago, he would have signed it at that point. Because, you know, what is Andrew Brandt, the old Packers guy, always says, deadlines spur action.
Sure.
Right? And the season was coming.
The season was coming, and there was maybe some spur to action there.
But we don't know that. We can't know that. All we know is what they were offering at the time, which was somewhere between $6 and $7 million, which is pretty ridiculous,
right,
considering what he ended up signing
between
for.
9 and 10.
Right, which is when you
and
come up to 8.25, and they should have made that offer a lot earlier, I think.
He should have come down a lot
earlier. Instead of expecting him to come down to 7, whatever it was. So, I don't know. I mean, we don't know exactly how the negotiations went. All we know is that their offer, I think, was a little bit more ridiculous than what he was asking for, and that if they were eventually going to meet there anyway, why not just get it over with instead of playing tough guy, which is what they were doing.
He was playing tough guy too, though.
Sure, but Cam Neely was coming out too.
I have a responsibility to future goalies who haven't even been born yet.
Cam Neely, 64 million reasons why we should tell everybody about the negotiations out in public.
Who started it?
I mean, you know, they both
Swayman
played
started
a role in it.
If calendars work the way I think they work, Swayman started it.
Sure.
And then Neely definitely made it worse.
I would agree. All right, fine.
He's also the professional who shouldn't. That's another thing. I expect players.
Well, Swayman's a professional too.
But he's not a professional in that. There's a reason you have an agent to not put yourself out there. There's a reason, you know, Boris
the
makes
call
all that
of
money.
The Shut Up Mark podcast, though, is just too loud to ignore, I guess.
I guess. I still don't really get that. I mean, I would go too if he offered me chicken.
Sure.
I would do anything for chicken.
Chicken looks good. Let's go to Paulie in Dedham. He has a Bruins thought. Go ahead, Paulie.
Hey, what did I tell you guys? I told you I'm worried about a shaky start and I'm worried about Montgomery. I think he's a good coach. But I think, like I say, these guys are a little bit tired of getting their butts kicked in the playoffs. They're like, oh, long road again ahead. And they're just not coming out hard. They looked so good a couple of years ago in that playoffs against Florida. That's why I think they came out hard the last year. Because, you know, they got the better of it. They should have beaten Florida that first time around. And then they get waxed the second time around. And, you know, that really took the wind out of their sails, yeah. I believe, coming into this year.
I agree with you, Paulie. I think that was a big thing that they dedicated this offseason to righting that wrong and to fixing that and to getting closer to Florida and becoming a team that could be more competitive with the Florida Panthers. And they only get a couple of chances to prove that, right, before you get to the playoffs, assuming that they face each other in the postseason, which I'm thinking they probably will. But who knows? You only get 3 guaranteed games against this team, and so far in 2 of them, they got beat pretty easily. So
yes.
I'd say that's not off to a great start. You're right.
And we're now coming up on like 10% of the season.
Right.
So you can continue to be worried, and people will continue to say, it's still early, Arcand. What are you bitching about?
Yeah, but I mean, get ready. It's going to keep happening until they get on a winning way.
Your guy Swayman earns his paycheck.
That would help, too. I'd like that, too. That would make me look better. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Jackson's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we'll talk with Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston.
Jones and Keefe, weekdays 10 to 2.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending brought to you by the 99. The Bruins and the Celtics return to action tonight. The Bees host the Dallas Stars tonight. Puck drop at the TD Garden is at 7 o'clock. And we can hear Mike Milbury talk about what's plaguing Marchand in the top line.
3 off-season surgeries. He's 36 years old. He's put on the second line. And, you know, I think you can only hope that he's going to come around. And I'm sure he will. He's too hard a competitor. Not to have some better production than this.
I'm sure he'll come around. The Celtics are in Washington to play the Wizards tonight. That game tips off at 7 o'clock. And the Patriots were back on the practice field today. We will get the full report in just about 10 minutes from Tom E. Curran, and he will tell us all about that. They are getting ready for the game against the Jets on Sunday. Week 8 in the NFL begins tonight with a Thursday night football game between the Minnesota Vikings and the Los Angeles Rams, which you can hear right here on WEEI. Kickoff is at 8:15, and the Westwood One's coverage of the game will begin at 7:30. I'm Jackson Burns. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. Cozy up to irresistible new fall flavors at the 99 restaurant, like the freshly baked home-style chicken pot pie, packed with chicken and topped with a buttery, flaky crust, or the creamy short rib mac and cheese. You've got to love the Nines.
This is Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcand, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937. Nice to have you with us here today. Tommy Curran joins the show here in about 6-7 minutes. From NBC Sports Boston, we'll get his take on all the things going on in that locker room and on the field as well with the New England Patriots. But real quick, I wanted to play this for you. This was Alex Van Pelt today when asked about Drake May's development. And this struck me because in a time where there's not much to really celebrate, the Drake May train seems to be going right on schedule. And it seems like Alex Van Pelt is eager to shift the narrative towards that. Let's listen to Van Pelt from earlier today.
Alex, what have you seen from Drake, you know, from start one to start two? What kind of things did you see him improve on, what continue to need to work on, and how much is the development of him go hand-to-hand with those guys that are saying they're open, finally getting them the ball?
Yeah. Again, that's every receiver, they're going to say, and I appreciate that and their remarks. But his development is where we need to be right now. I think he saw the field extremely well last week. He knew exactly what the defense was giving him. And when they tried to disguise, took advantage of some throws down the field in those situations. So his development, I'm really happy with what he's done from week to week. Again, and that's from the start of the season through watching his practice reps. I'm happy there. We just got to continue to grow as a group.
Okay, well, everyone's happy. Everything seems to be going exactly as planned. The development is right where it needs to be, as in I waited the exact perfect amount of time before we put him in there and made him the starter. What do you make of that, Andy?
I think he is talking to his bosses. I think he is talking to people like you.
When I talk to the media, I'm really talking to the Crafts.
Absolutely.
And to Arcand and Hart and the WWE.
Absolutely, right. People like you that said, and me, I'm not avoiding it. I did say this year was about May, and if you get to January and say, we have a quarterback, you've accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
Almost regardless of all the other fire.
Absolutely.
Dumpster fire that's going on around you. And maybe he believes it, first of all. I guess we could take it very matter-of-factly. He believes it. But I also think he is pointing out that is the most important thing. That's my job, by the way. You remember when Gerard said one voice, there's going to be one voice with Drake May and somebody's going to develop him.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. And he might even hear whispers. I don't know how much. Based on everything that's going on, I'm just going to assume all these people that are tied to the Patriots hear and read everything because they seem to interact with everything.
They don't seem to miss much.
No.
Right? They don't seem to miss too many comments or too many things. Yes.
I'll include him in that pile then and say he knows that there's been talk of firing him, replacing him, sacrificing him, but there's also been talk of, well, he's developing the quarterback, so let's just keep him around to develop the quarterback in the future. We'll bring somebody else in to call plays. And he's like, well, I'll lean into that a little bit if I continue to collect my salary, right? So I think it was self-serving, but I also think there's truth to it.
There is, and I brought this up pretty early when I said, right after the second game, everything's coming down on Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt and everything else, and it's fair to say, hey, wait a minute. What's this season all about again? Did we lose the plot here on this? Did we lose the plot on what everyone's expectations were and what everyone was supposed to be focusing on and what's actually important about this season of Patriots football? I think that's true. I think there's something to that. I think that this roster and everything was built in the spirit of that. You think that this team's trying to lose on purpose. I mean, come on.
Ish.
Like, right? Like, that's not something that you do and then you turn around and say, hey, coach, how come you're not out there winning these games? Like, that's not fair. It's got to be one thing or the other. And if you're saying it's the other thing, then yeah, these guys are failing. But if it's really just about bringing along Drake May, so far Drake May looks like he's coming along just fine.
All right, so you're forcing me to look at my own takes on the coaches, and that's fair. I thought Alex Van Pelt was a train wreck hire. Hasn't been a train wreck hire. I have criticisms. Hell, he's called himself out along the way. He even called himself out today about the first Jets game where he put Jacoby Brissett in bad situations.
Right.
But he hasn't been a train wreck. I liked the Gerard Mayo hire. I said, it's great that Robert had conviction in his thought and wanted to hire him. He's got a track record.
Train wreck city.
Train wreck city. So if we're going to compare expectations to performances, Alex Van Pelt's done a much better job, correct?
Yes, although I wouldn't say that this offense has been, like, from an offensive, from bringing along Drake May, sure.
That's half the job.
But that's, all right, if that's half of his job, he's done that half pretty well. The other half's train wreck city, I'd say, too.
Train wreck seems strong.
Is he calling great offense? Is he calling great plays
Not
out there?
Not great, but I don't know about train wreck. I would say, like, that might be a D, and if you average out the 50% A and the 50% D, he's got a nice B-minus that he's doing.
And it's sort of hard to tell when Brissett's out there as your quarterback. I mean, I'd say that. The offense
has
looked better in the last 2 weeks. I'll give
you
that.
He won a game with him.
Yeah.
What has Gerard Mayo done well? Tommy Curran.
Yeah, let's go to Tommy Curran right now. He's brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com and by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. Talking, of course, about the great Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston who joins us right now. Hello, Tommy. How are you today?
Chris, Good. How are you? I'm tremendous. How are you? Hi, Drew.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing fine over here. It's been a very tumultuous week over there in Foxborough. A lot of things being said about a lot of different people. Let's start with Jerod Mayo and the idea that after a very short amount of time, small sample size here, even for the NFL, where they only play one game a week, it seems as though things are starting to sour there, not just from the locker room where we can see and hear what all these players are saying, but perhaps from over his head. It seems as though maybe the people who were so proud of the decision to hire him and to bring him in 5 years ago maybe reconsidering what they've done. Is that something you feel comfortable commenting on here at this point in the season on October 24th?
Sure, I'll comment on it. Why do you have the idea that ownership doesn't want him as the head coach? Because I guess that's what you're driving at.
Yeah, I think that there's been not really reports, but rumors out there. You heard Florio recently talking about how he thinks that Mayo's going to talk himself right out of the job. I even heard you the other day. You didn't say this outright, obviously, Tommy, but when it was brought up, you certainly weren't quick to shoot it down. So I guess that's why I'm asking you right now. Is that something that you think is happening?
No, I don't think that ownership is in a position where they're about to pull the trigger and fire Jerod Mayo.
I didn't say they're going to do it this week, but in the sense of
You said that people above Jerod Mayo have soured on him.
Yes.
Where's that coming from? There's a big difference between Florio saying that Mayo can talk himself out of a job, which would be hyperbolic and speculative. There can be me saying that his messaging has not been good, as I've said many times. He's got to improve that, and that he certainly wasn't ready for the entire thing to be foisted upon him the way it was. But it was a situation that was predicated by what happened last year. But again, where is it coming from that ownership is soured on him?
Well, it would seem that if these are things that could happen in year one, or if these are things that aren't being shot down very quickly by people who would be in the know, that it's on the table, I guess. That's sort of where it is. I'm not making a definitive statement here, but I'm probing the topic.
There's a big difference between a report that ownership is souring on him and the guy's taking on water. How does he fix it? I guess.
Okay.
So to me, he's got to fix his messaging. He's got to have a better understanding of exactly how what he says is going to play in his locker room, play in the media, impact his team, impact the national conversation around the Patriots. And that's why, you know, when I said on my podcast the other day that he wasn't ready, I think that that's a bigger conversation as to, well, why is he the head coach? And that tracks back further to what the expectations were for the Patriots entering last season after 2022 with Bill Belichick and what they ended up deciding had to happen. So they aren't ready. They weren't ready. They were not ready to pull the trigger on Bill, but they also came to a conclusion as the season went along and they were 2-11, that they said, this isn't something we're going to do again. We're not going to give them $150 million of spending in the third overall pick for another rebuild after this one went the way it is. If we're going to win four games and we're not enjoying the experience, we'll win four games with somebody else. It's basically what it boiled down to.
Okay.
So that's why when I say not ready, they didn't have an appreciation for how bad a rebuild year with a first-year head coach, a litany of injuries, first-year coordinators, et cetera, might look.
Okay, fair enough. Doug Kide in the Herald today said Patriots ownership CEO and Chairman Robert Kraft and President Jonathan Kraft have to decide whether they allow that experience to come organically or if they need to step in at some point and inject more experience into the coaching staff. As a source believes, some of the team issues stem from a lack of experience. Now, that's not quite going to where I was before either, but it does sort of seem as though they're looking at the Jerod Mayo experience in year one as something that needs to be fixed much more quickly than maybe I was expecting him to get a lot more leash, I guess, than this. What?
I don't know. I just don't think that sentence says that. I think that sentence that you read says, if it continues this way, this will be something that ownership has to consider, as opposed to this being smoking gun evidence that ownership is on the cusp of making a decision on Jerod Mayo's future, whether it be immediately or at the end of the season. So I'm just trying to pin down somewhere between, hey, ownership is souring on Mayo, which I strongly believe to not be the case. And there's a recognition that this is going not that great right now. So there's a big difference there.
Tom, I'm of the belief that the on-the-field action is the least of Gerard Mayo's problems right now, that the record in a
100%.
Weird... So with the culture being questioned, with the pot shots from Mike Lombardi and everybody from afar about, oh, it's so fun there, do you think Gerard is questioning his own philosophies? Because they clearly wanted to change the culture. And Elliot, I'll put him in here because he had the less hard-ass vibes comment that everybody mm-hmm. ran with. Do you think those two guys at this point, given everything that's happened off the field, on social media, in interviews, do you think they're questioning the culture and the style with which they began this era?
I would hope that they are. I really would. I don't know if no one has told me directly that, man, we gave these guys too much freedom. I think there is a tendency, and you've seen it over the years, whether it be with Bill or assistant coaches or anybody or players themselves, to look for reasons why that might be ancillary. Mm. And I think if you look at the culture right now and see guys going off half-cocked on social media, complaining about their roles, asking for the ball more, leaving the team in the case of Troops of Cora for acting out and getting into situations with law enforcement, then you're going to say, well, maybe it's all those injuries to all our leaders. You know, maybe the Sabbath all teams that are losing. To me, what's interesting is we saw so many Patriots disciples of Bill go elsewhere and try and bring the Patriots culture elsewhere, and it didn't work because players and media were on alert that, oh, he's going to come in here and try and be a dictator. Now you have, in the Patriots organization, they wanted to keep one foot in the past with the tradition and the ethos, but they wanted to move forward to a kinder, gentler, more open and permissive culture. And right here is where it's gone the other direction, where players are acting out and the losses mount and the ability of guys to say, well, if we're just going to be losing anyway, I probably should be out for myself. And that seems to be the issue with KJ Osborne, for instance. Professional guy, veteran guy, he's like, well, I'm getting benched. What do I want to be here for? This sucks. They suck, and I can't even play for them. What does that say about my situation? I'm all set if I leave. Paraphrasing, he didn't say that, but he did say it would be an alley-oop.
Yes.
If he had an opportunity to go elsewhere.
Yes, and that was one of many comments made by wide receivers over the course of this week. We're talking with Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. When this relates to Drake May, these are his targets. These are the guy who he's working with each and every week. It seemed as though most of the frustration was coming because Jacoby Brissett couldn't get on the ball. Now they got Drake May out there, and these guys are still popping off like this. Does that start to affect Drake May at some point?
That's something I've been focusing on a lot this week, Christian, is he's out there herding cats now. You can't use Javon Baker and you can't use Tyquan Thornton because neither one is either good enough or understands the offense or where he's supposed to be or how to be a professional player yet. So you can't use either of them. Kayshawn Booty's pretty useful, but he looks in the mirror and sees Marvin Harrison. Meanwhile, Jalen Polk is not that useful, and he's injured, and he looks in the mirror and sees Reggie Wayne. And these guys are 23, 24 years old who have never really dealt with football adversity, having played at LSU and Oregon and been featured guys who everyone told them they were so incredible. There's no one there checking their behavior. And this is, again, it is all intertwined. Wouldn't it be great to have Jacoby Myers here now?
Mm. Yeah.
And I look at that and I say, it's not just Bill and hearkening back to that, because Juju Smith-Schuster and Devontae Parker were part of this organization too, and Elliot Wolf and Matt Groh must have had some kind of role there. I mean, everyone plays Mickey the Dunce and says, wasn't us, wasn't him. At some point, it wasn't all Bill. And I look at the decisions made and the culture of that room, and I look at Drake May, who's trying to figure out how to do the most important job in sports and having to deal with this level of chaos. And that's a place where I probably think Alex Van Pelt might be a benefit, because he is fairly even-keeled. He's seen a lot in his time in the league. He's 52 years old. He might be able to be a help to Drake May, and that I've seen this movie before. It happens. We'll be okay.
Tom, along those lines, a guy that I am intrigued by, I don't really know what he does. Gerard has described his role a little bit, but not real deeply. This Ben McAdoo role. And he's a guy that's been a head coach. He's been around Aaron Rodgers. He's been an offensive coordinator for a period of time. He should be one of the more experienced and probably influential advisors to Jerod. What is he doing, and does he need to do more, or is he doing too much? Like, give me something on Ben McAdoo, I guess.
I'll try and find out more. So far, all I know is he's a sounding board, an overseer, a handholder. He's a Johnny on the spot. Kind of the way Patricia was. Remember, Patricia came in his first year, trying to lick his wounds from being fired by the Lions. He came in and just kind of, whatever we need to do. Contracts, I'll do the contracts. Negotiations, I'll do negotiations. Special teams, I'll go over there. What do you need? I'll do it. And then his role grew in 2022. But I think McAdoo is kind of in that role. I don't know. And what's also interesting is all these guys are foisted upon each other together. Not to say that Mayo didn't get to hire his staff. DeMarcus Covington, Brian Belichick, Pellegrino, all those guys were here. But a lot of these guys come in with "Hello, my name is" tags on their shirts, and they're trying to figure out how everybody works together. What's his job? How is he? Is he a good guy? Is he a guy I can trust? Is he a guy I can work well with? Does he know what he's talking about? So I'd be interested to know what the Ben McAdoo, Alex Van Pelt relationship is like. Whether T.C. McCartney, Ben McAdoo, or Ben McAdoo, Jerod Mayo. I know nothing about that. They've just brought in a lot of hats. And all the hats are sitting there. And now that it's going south, I can't imagine that a lot of the hats are saying, I don't have any idea how to fix it. I'm sure there's a million ideas if we just do this. And that's why it's a very hard spot for an inexperienced head coach to be in, to have a bad roster, a ton of injuries, be a little bit overmatched at the podium right now, and to have players acting out.
Is it unfair for me to ask you the because I asked you last week, percent chance that Alex Van Pelt is back as the OC next year. And is it unfair to ask the same question about Jerod Mayo at this point? What are the percent chances he's back next year?
I don't know whether it's fair or unfair. It's being asked enough where I can't really say on that. I would say, hypothetically, it would have to be an unmitigated disaster. And the mutinous aspects that were referred to 3 weeks ago would have to be in play. So we're not even talking wins and losses. We're talking how does it look at the end of the year.
I mean, isn't that what it looks like right now?
Is it not a disaster now?
Yeah.
Right, but the season doesn't end after seven games.
Turnaround,
sure. Maybe. All right, well, hey, a turnaround would be nice.
How does it look in November and December?
Yeah.
We've seen teams that look like ass early, and then by the end of the year, they're just cheeks. So... maybe they can turn it around to that level.
All right. Well, in that vein, it's time now for Tommy Curran's Flex of the Game, presented by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership and save thousands with FlexCar. Who's going to flex this weekend, Tommy?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is the guy I'm curious about seeing his performance, because he absolutely followed up exactly where Geno Smith left off the week before when the Patriots faced the Jets the first time around. He was impossible to stop through the air. He is right now. Aaron Rodgers is feeling badly because he did not have a good game last week, and saying that he's going to reapply his leadership skills. So I'm a little concerned that the flex of the game might come from the intolerable one, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's probably true, and an unfortunate reality of where this team is right now. But yeah, I think you're right. Although my buddy here, Andy Hart, thinks that the Patriots coming into this game
have the quarterback
advantage. What do you think of that, Tom?
Right now,
I think that feels like, you mean like Thursday at 3:42?
Like short window, maybe the last 2 weeks, because that's all you got for Drake May, and Aaron Rodgers hasn't been playing well.
Then I'm going to go with you. Then I'm gonna concur.
Thank you.
All right.
There you go.
Beacon of hope. It's a beacon.
Tommy and Andy together again.
66% of the people on this show right now agree that Drake May is better than Aaron
Rodgers. Money is us.
There you go. All right, Tommy Curran, thank you very much for your time. NBC Sports Boston, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
All right, that is Tommy Curran right there, denying the idea.
You were setting me up, and you took it on the chin.
Denying the idea that, first of all, Aaron Rodgers is better than Drake May, and that ownership is souring at all on Jerod Mayo.
Hey, you guys had a little tete-a-tete
back and forth there. I was fine with that. I mean, I asked the question a certain way. He had a problem with it, but I thought it was a fair thing to start probing at this point. People absolutely are talking about it. I don't see any problem with that.
No, it's absolutely a talking point. I mean, Bill Belichick.
He denied it. I mean, I got an answer out of him. He said, no, they haven't soured on him.
Bill Belichick said it. He seems like an expert witness,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Florio, for all his faults, Florio kind of has built a business on these kind of things.
Definitely.
Muckraking and coaches getting fired and trades and that kind of area. So, yeah, and there's every reason. The one thing I would question Tommy on is, like, if it's a disaster, he might be out.
If
it's a disaster.
If it continues to be a disaster.
I was going to say, do disasters usually just stop being disasters? Like, hurricanes that are plowing towards Florida just go, where'd it go? It disappeared. It's not on the radar anymore.
I mean, this one kind of did, right? After, like, day two, it was pretty much gone.
Well, yeah, but it kind of did damage.
It did some damage, and there's a lot of damage being done right now. No question about it. 617-779-7937, your phone number. We'll get to your phone calls. And the Netflix show, or documentary, I should say, the three-part special on the 2004 Boston Red Sox has dropped. We'll react to that next.
We're right back to it. Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI. WEEI.
Little taste there. I believe that was from the trailer for the comeback 2004 Netflix three-part miniseries about the 2004 Red Sox. A team that's had virtually no media about them ever put out ever. 4 days in October, that thing with Bill Simmons and Lenny Clark. Remember, they're sitting at the bar talking about 04 and all that. Maybe that was the same thing. Maybe that was four days in October. Either way, I'm talking about the same thing. There's been plenty of stuff about the 04 team, and I didn't even realize. I knew it was coming up and that it was going to be coming out soon. It's dropped now, and it's out there. I have not watched it yet. I plan on watching it. I plan on watching all three because, of course, I will. But I didn't realize that we were here already. One thing that I can't help but find ironic about all this is that everybody seems to be really into it. Everybody I've seen online who's watched it so far is saying how great it is and how it takes them right back to 04 and what a great time that was to be a Red Sox fan and how great the team was and ownership was so great and blah, 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 all this stuff. Meanwhile, Netflix also had a whole thing, a documentary, season-long documentary on this year's team.
Mm-hmm.
And we might be in it, actually. I think we, I don't know about you. You probably aren't, but I might be.
I never make the cut.
I know. It's too bad. It's a real shame. My heart's bleeding for that right now.
Hurtful.
But they were there a couple of times when we interviewed Cora in the old show, and the Netflix cameras were around all the time. They had them out there on those little segues, you know, with those big cameras and the boom mics on the top and stuff. And they were getting some good footage. Then he remarkably didn't see him after that. I wonder what that's about. About three quarters of the way through the season, you didn't see those cameras ever. I was walking in there once. I could have sworn I seen one guy with a Netflix lanyard just packing up all the cameras. Like, yeah, I think we got enough. I don't think we need to record this team
anymore.
This
is going nowhere.
We see all we need to see. And it's interesting to me that there's right now this nostalgia-ridden 2004, remember David Ortiz breaking the curse and young John Henry, well, younger John Henry and Warner and everybody out there and the parade and all that and Pedro and how great it all was. And then there's the current state of the team, which is now 6 years removed from their last World Series. They've moved on from a lot of their good young core of players. And they've now made it a habit of every year completely falling apart in the second half of the year from August or maybe September on and being whisked right out of playoff contention in a time where it is much, much easier to make the playoffs in Major League Baseball. I find that interesting that Netflix has these two concurrent Red Sox-related pieces of media out and that they're very, very different.
And we'll never know this, I don't think, but the numbers would be interesting. What the numbers they get of streams versus living in history and living in the present.
I'd be surprised I don't spike the one from this season.
Quietly, it just goes away. Like Cam Newton's.
Who the hell's going to watch a thing about this year? They fell apart again. Like, what do we need to watch that for?
Like Cam
Newton's interested in that? Red Sox fans don't even want that.
I have no interest in it. I mean, it wasn't that interesting in the end when you lived it. I mean, they had some ups and downs, and there were times where I got caught up in it. I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy the season at various points, but not at a documentary level of enjoyment. I will say also, though, I always believe documentarians, it's a skill. They're good at it.
Sure.
And they can turn it into something where they're like, I don't remember it really feeling that way at the time, but they'll make me feel a little something. This, in terms of the 20th anniversary, I love because it's 20 years. Like, it's been long enough. Even though there have been things along the way, I'm willing. And Jones, the softer midday Jones, said he's really enjoying it. And he doesn't enjoy anything. So if the Grinch likes it, I'll probably like it.
He likes things from, like, his youth.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Before he went all mean
and whatever he's turned into.
Mm-hmm. And now turned back.
And come back, yes. And there's I've seen a few things. Like Kevin Millar seems really good in it. They got the old footage with him and Dan Shaughnessy when he called them an embarrassment or whatever. And then Millar calls him out on it, and that turns into a whole,
right,
don't let us win just one. And he's walking around the field telling everybody, I'm telling you, I know you're a New England guy, don't let us win just one. And we don't have to lose this. If we win, like that whole famous thing. And sure, I like Millar. I know Millar can be polarizing. Some people don't really love him. He's not great on Nesson. I don't really love him on the games now. But bigger picture for something like this.
My Nesson app keeps crashing, so I don't even know what he sounds like on that thing.
Yeah, he's not great. And they're not playing anymore. But no, I'm interested in this. And the thing that I did, you know, the too long didn't read, too long didn't watch. I looked at it. It's three episodes of an hour each, basically. Oh, yeah. That's right in my sweet spot. That's it's not a 10-part, two-hour, blah, blah, blah series type thing. Three episodes, an hour each. You got me.
My only problem here now is that there's a Celtics game and a Bruins game tonight and a Thursday night football game, which I'm going to try and monitor all three of those things. If I try and dig into this after that, I'm not going to let I'm going to fall asleep on the couch. I'm going to miss the whole thing.
Yeah, no.
I'm having a real problem right now trying to stay awake for stuff that's on past 9 o'clock in my house. Even if it's like the second half of a game, whatever it is, I'm sitting there, I'm trying to focus.
Welcome to my world.
How
old are you?
It's three. I'm 42. I wake up, it's 3 a.m. and I'm down there on the couch. I'm still sitting up. I got my jeans on still, my shoes on. And I'm just like, what happened? What's going on? What is this programming on TV right now? It's like some paid advertisement. And I'm sitting there looking at it like, oh, man. Because that, you know, you remember when you're in your old day, when your younger days, you wake up on the couch with your clothes on. You're like, oh, I had a pretty good night. Not anymore. Nope. Not anymore. Now it's just my regular life. I'm eating dinner. I put the dishes in the sink. I come back. I sit down. I wake up. It's 3 a.m. And I still have my shoes on.
You're officially a middle-aged man.
It sucks, man. It sucks. I don't like this at all.
Nope. 40s is where you die. Yeah. I've lived it.
It's really true. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll get to your Patriots phone calls. And when we come back, Andy Hart believes that the Patriots have the checkmark at QB this weekend against the New York Jets. We'll get to all of that next.